comes to Celtic history, naturally people's first thoughts would turn to the east end of Glasgow. But in fact, the boys have several connections to the city's west end as well. One walking tour tells the full story of so many locations which have been right at the heart of Celtic story that can be found in the west end of the city. The first location of note on this walk takes us to Hindland Avenue. Hindland Avenue was the home of Willie Mailey, Celtic's legendary manager. He is in fact the longest serving man in post, and as well as the most successful in terms of trophies won. Interestingly for Willie Mailey, it was actually partly an accident that brought him to Celtic. The club's founders, John Glass and brother Walfred, had gone to Kafkar, where Willie lived, to try and entice his brother Tom to play for Celtic. Given that Tom was out at that point, Willie was instead invited to come along to try out as well. He became a hugely important player for the club. As well as appearing in the first game, he was also part of the first trophy, the first league title, and so many other stories as a player, before ultimately becoming a legendary manager for 43 years. Willie's home in Hindland Avenue, which he moved to after splitting from his wife, was a key part of Celtic and World War I story. During World War I, 80,000 Belgian refugees arrived in Scotland. Many people were asked if they could take in some of them, and Willie Mailey did this. Celtic were also involved in helping raise other war funds. This included the Lord Provost Fund when they played a Scottish League 11 as champions, which took place in 1915, 16 and 17. Arguably, of all Celtic's World War I titles, the most interesting was the 1916 one, because on this occasion, Celtic had to play two games in one day to win the title, facing Raith Rovers at home and Motherwell at Fir Park. There are various other Celtic connections to World War I as well. Many Celts, both fans and players, went to war, and some of them died. This included people such as Peter Johnson, Lee Roos, and Archie McMillan. The next stop on the walking tour takes all participants to Glasgow University. Looking at the modern day site, there is very little to tell that this is in fact a hugely significant part of Celtic's early history. On the site of what is now a chemistry building stands the location where Celtic played their first ever game away from Celtic Park and their first ever competitive game. In 1888, Celtic played their first game, and later that year, starting in August, they took part in their first competition, the Exhibition Cup. This was one part of a festival that was being held at Kelvin Grove Park, which saw 6 million visitors attend. The proceeds of this ultimately helped pay for different things, such as the modern day Kelvin Grove Art Gallery. This cup competition was held at Glasgow University's recreation grounds, which is now the site, as noted, of a chemistry building and can be found in the shadow of the famous Tower Building. Playing in this competition, Celtic first of all drew with Paisley side Abercorn, Celtic's first ever competitive game. They then went on to beat Dumbarton Athletic, this being Celtic's first ever competitive win, before just edging past Partick Thistle. In the final, Celtic lost 2-0 to North Glasgow side Cowlairs. It was a huge disappointment, but it did at least mean that Celtic in their first season had already reached their first final. This wasn't the only occasion where Celtic played at the Glasgow University Recreation Grounds. The 1901 Charity Cup was also held there, and this saw Celtic beat Rangers, although ultimately they lost the final to Fir Lanark. Glasgow University has other connections to Celtic as well. Various people connected with the club have attended Glasgow University. This includes particularly founders, directors, and even some players. Perhaps the most notable in Celtic's early history was John Conway. He became a doctor and was involved with various Catholic charities as well as Celtic. His most notable claim to fame in a footballing sense is that he was the first ever man to kick a ball at the original Celtic Park. Another notable Celt who was a university graduate was Willie Kivlicken. He played for both Celtic and Rangers, although in fact his most notable act in a footballing sense doesn't involve playing for either. Instead, it is part of a sad story. In 1931, he was Celtic's club doctor who had the sad task of coming onto the park to treat John Thompson after his injury at Ibrox, which would ultimately see him lose his life. There are other Celtic connections in relation to both Rangers and Glasgow University. For one thing, a Celtic and Rangers joint team once played a Glasgow University side. This took place in 1936 and was a friendly to open the university's new sports grounds at Gerscadden. At various other times, there have been joint Celtic and Rangers teams too. This includes for sad events such as the Ibrox disaster, when Celtic and Rangers took on a Scotland 11, but also other events as well, including legendary Man City player Billy Meredith's testimonial. A step a little bit further on from Glasgow University brings us to an event which, while not directly connected to Celtic, does remind us of certain aspects of Celtic's history. Stepping into Kelvin Grove Park, we come across the Boer War Memorial. The Boer War was a hugely contentious event in the late 18 and early 1900s. This is a reminder of the many political arguments which were part of Celtic's early history. Many Celts were an important part of the campaign against the war. This included people such as John Glass, the club's president, and also former club patron Michael Davitt, who in fact resigned as an MP over the war. However, on the other hand, there were those Celts that supported the conflict. This included one of Celtic's hugely significant early figures, John H. McLaughlin. He actively supported the war, even going so far as to help raise funds for this. And indeed, there was a major event held at Celtic Park in relation to the Boer War. It was used to host the Patriotic Games in 1900, which aimed to support British soldiers who had been killed or injured in the conflict. In fact, soldiers both at this event, but other ones, also used to be given free entry to Celtic Park. On leaving the Boer War Memorial, it's but yet a short distance to the next stop, which connects Celtic to Glasgow's West End. At Six Park Gardens, you can see the former headquarters of the Scottish Football Association. The SFA had moved there in 1957 from their previous location at Carlton Place, just over the river from the Glasgow city centre. Ultimately, the majority of the time Celtic were at Park Gardens was as part of some aspect of controversy. This included complaints in relation to Celtic's infamous game with Racing Club in 1967. Before Celtic had even gone, the SFA had issued a match ban for Jimmy Johnson, and this resulted in Celtic threatening to sue the SFA if Johnson was not allowed to play in this game. Although, given the violence which occurred as part of this, perhaps Celtic's little winger would have been happy if he hadn't done so. Another time where Celtic were a topic of discussion in the area was in 1968, when club chairman Bob Kelly took a hugely political action when he refused to allow Celtic to play against communist teams. This followed Soviet military action in Czechoslovakia. It ultimately forced UEFA to do a new draw. And on other occasions, of course, Celtic have been part of arguments here. This included after the so-called shame game against Rangers in 1987, which ultimately saw Frank McAvenny and various Rangers players taken to court. Perhaps the most notable, though, which ultimately ended badly for the SFA's figure in this case, was that of Fergus McCann versus Jim Farrey. McCann, of course, complained about deliberate actions by the SFA to stop George Cadetti being able to play against Rangers. This ultimately saw Jim Farrey being removed from post. Six Park Gardens, in fact, has various other historical points of interest out with Celtic, not least the fact that in 1913, two suffragettes attempted to burn it down. After leaving the SFA's headquarters, there is a short walk to Claremont Street. This is where, in the 1930s, you would have found Trinity Congregational Church. This is another event that has a sad connection to John Thompson's death. Thompson, of course, was killed in September 1931 following an accidental collision with Rangers player Sam English. It was said that so devastating was the impact on English that after Thompson's death, in fact, two lives had been lost that day. As part of a memorial for Thompson, and just before his actual funeral, there was a special commemoration service held in Trinity Congregational Church. This took place on the 8th of September 1931. Celtic and Rangers players were in attendance, and indeed representatives from both gave readings. But it wasn't just the players who'd gone. There were thousands of people who'd come along as part of huge crowds. In fact, so crowded was it that some of the players couldn't actually get into the church without a police escort. It saw a famous line from the minister who criticised the hatred that was increasingly associated with both sides of the Old Firm. His famous words were, "Do they realise that their shameless jeering was the last sound that reached John Thompson's dying brain?" The following day saw even more crowds as Thompson's funeral took place in Fife. Just a couple of minutes or so from Claremont Street, you can walk down to Breadalbane Street. The building in question is no longer there, but this was once the site of Grove Stadium, which was a boxing venue. It's also one of the places that helped create the Celtic Supporters Association. Towards the end of World War II, a Celtic supporter called Willie Fanning wrote to the Daily Record asking if the various Celtic clubs which existed would like to establish some sort of association. Within a year of this, the association was established and was then officially recognised by the club, becoming involved in ticket arrangements and so on. Meetings took place in different places, including Shettleston, but also out at Grove Stadium. It wasn't really an ideal venue. The speakers and committee men had to actually stand in the ring to address the crowds. The Celtic Supporters Association, in fact, helped other clubs, including Rangers, to set up their own groups. And also, in perhaps what is a sign of changed days, they were involved in extensive fundraising, including for things such as Erskine Veterans Hospital, obviously reflecting the reality of lives that everyone had had during World War II. On leaving Breadalbane Street, you can walk a short distance up to Kelvin Hall Street. This would take you down to what, in the past, was York Hill Quay. York Hill Quay was one of the main places that, in the past, people would have travelled to if they were going to places such as America. Celtic's first visit to America came in 1931, and they left York Hill Quay in May of that year. 15,000 fans came to cheer them on as they sailed on the RMS Caledonia, which would later, with a changed name, be sunk by a U-boat during World War II. They played 14 friendlies during this trip, although given the violence associated with one or two of the games, friendlies is perhaps the wrong title. And in fact, the Scottish Cup was taken by them to show them round. Celtic appeared at many famous stadia on this, including the Yankee Stadium and also Fenway Park in Boston. It was notable for other events as well. For instance, when Celtic beat Michigan 5-0, playing at the University of Detroit Stadium, this was Celtic's first floodlight game. It was also a tour where they came across Joe Kennaway, who would ultimately be the goalkeeper who would replace John Thompson after his death. When the boys returned to Scotland, they did so minus one person. Jimmy McGrory got off the boat slightly early and got married in Ireland to Veronica Green. And of course, it's not just York Hill Quay that has a relevance to Celtic. Simply walking down to the Clyde gives us a reminder of Celtic's various shipyard connections, including numerous players and fans who've worked in these places. After walking along from Kelvin Hall Street, you come across Kelvin Grove Art Gallery. As was mentioned earlier, this art gallery was paid for by the proceeds of the 1888 exhibition, which saw Celtic reach the final. In 1901, another exhibition was held at Kelvin Grove Park, this time with a trophy where Celtic would ultimately claim, even though it saw them losing the final. In the 1901 Exhibition Cup, Celtic first of all met Hibs and then Hearts to reach the final. However, this would prove to be a less than successful game as they lost 3-1 to Rangers. The Ibrox side as a result of this gained a grand trophy, one in fact that names Rangers as the winners, but is held at Celtic Park. The reason for this came a year later. In 1902, disaster struck. Playing at Ibrox, a Scotland and England game saw a stand collapse, which killed 25 people and injured more than 500. There were various fundraising initiatives which took place to support the victims of the accident. One part of this was to hold a so-called British League Cup. This saw Rangers inviting Sunderland, Everton and Celtic to compete for the trophy that they had won in the 1901 exhibition. Celtic beat Sunderland in the semi-final, and after a replay, Rangers eventually made it past Everton. Celtic would ultimately meet Rangers in the final at Cathkin Park, and they won after extra time, despite what newspaper reports said, suggesting that the game had in fact ended as a 2-2 draw. Rangers, however, weren't happy. They apparently expected that although Celtic had won the trophy, they would hand it back, which Celtic refused to do. And even decades later, they continued to face complaints, including legal letters received as late as the 1950s. Just across from Kelvin Grove Art Gallery can be found the Kelvin Hall. This was another site where Celtic had trophy connections. In 1951, the St Mungo Cup was held. This was part of that year's Festival of Britain, an event that took place from May to September, with different events being held across Britain. 16 Scottish teams entered a competition, most of which was played in Glasgow. This saw Celtic beat Hearts, Clyde and then Raith Rovers to reach the final. In this game, they would face Aberdeen, and ultimately won 3-2 to claim the cup. However, unlike in the modern era where trophies were given on the pitch straight at the end of the game, this was a very different time. Instead, to see Celtic claim the St Mungo's Cup, a special trophy ceremony was held at the Kelvin Hall, and fans could get tickets for this in order to attend. In fact, this trophy was the later the cause of Celtic complaints. Although they were told it was a brand new trophy made for this competition, they later discovered it had originally had other purposes, including being an 1890s yachting prize. Celtic initially demanded that a brand new trophy be made, although ultimately they relented from this. To this day, the St Mungo Cup can be seen at Celtic Park. Another Celtic location in Glasgow's West End is a bit of a walk from the Kelvin Hall and takes us towards the modern day Glasgow Harbour Flats. However, going back to the early 1900s, this was Meadowside, Partick Thistle's ground. In 1907, this location saw Celtic complete their third league title in a row. They beat Thistle 2-0 to seal the title. And in fact, this was one part of what became a then world record of six league titles in a row, going from 1905 to 1910. This was a record that stood, in fact, until 1972, when Celtic in fact beat this with their own seven in a row run. Celtic have actually won the league at 20 different grounds, Celtic Park being obviously the most common, but also 19 others. So that's the tale of Celtic and Glasgow's West End. There are other locations with Celtic and football connections, but these are some of the most notable ones. If you'd like to attend a walking tour to find out more, you can either follow Hail Hail History on Twitter, X or Blue Sky, or you can visit CelticWalkingTours.wordpress.com for more information.